Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Today on The Charlie Kirk Show, we watch the first two Democrat debates so you don't have to. Exposing the blatant deceit, the hypocrisy, the dust-ups, and the takeaways. We'll recap night one, where Warren took center stage, and night two, Bernie versus Biden versus Buttigieg and Kamala. And of course, the conspicuous absence of, guess who, two words. I'll let you guess. Listen to the show. You'll find out. We have some analysis that you definitely won't hear anywhere else. This is Charlie Kirk, host of The Charlie Kirk Show. So before we go any further, did you know a recent Gallup survey shows Americans worry more about burglary than almost any other crime? It's even more than mugging, more than terrorism, more than car theft and murder. According to studies, just over 10% of break-ins are planned beforehand. The rest are spur of the moment, crimes of opportunity, in other words, totally random. Did you know that most break-ins happen between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m.? Right in the middle of the day. According to the FBI, the average loss in a burglary is over $2,000. This can be really hard to recover from. There are over 2 million burglaries reported every single year. That's one every 13 seconds. And what's crazy is that only one in five homes have home security. Maybe that's because most companies really don't make it easy. I could tell you this is such an amazing product you need. Guess what is it? Simply Safe. That's why Simply Safe is my top choice. Hands down, Simply Safe protects your whole home, every window, room, and door with 24/7 monitoring for just a fraction of the cost. Their police dispatch is 3.5 times faster because they use video verification. They make it easy on you. There's no contract, hidden fees, or fine print. It's designed to blend right into your home. No wires, no drilling. It's easy to order and easy to set up, usually under an hour. It's won a ton of awards from CNET to the New York Times Wire Cutter. Prices are always fair and honest. Around-the-clock monitoring is just $15 a month. Visit simplysafe.com/charlotte. That's right. Take out your phone. Do it right now. You'll get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. You've got nothing to lose. Go now. Be sure you go to simplysafe.com/charlie so they know our show sent you. That's simplysafe.com/charlie. What's up, everybody? Welcome to this edition of the Charlie Kirk Show, a special edition when we go through the Democrat debate debacle. I watch the Democrat debates so you don't have to. I hope you were flourishing and prospering. In the Trump economy, you probably were. You probably were enjoying your family. You were probably enjoying a great night. I was watching the Democrat debates so you don't have to. Or maybe you did watch it, but we're going to give you a great rundown. We're going to walk you through some of the highlights and some of the deeper points that I think the media is missing and some big takeaways and tie that in with some predictions. But let's first start. These primary debates actually matter. According to The Economist, primary debates are actually responsible for changes in polling. This was so interesting. I read this that rival the effects of the Iowa caucus on public opinion. So all of us know how the media tries to drum up the importance of the Iowa caucus. Iowa is the first. It's not a primary. It's a caucus. So just so you understand the difference, a primary is just a traditional election where you go and cast your ballot. A caucus, I actually visited the Iowa caucus back in 2016. And actually was able to speak at them. They're actually community meetings, and people will talk on behalf of what candidate they like, and a lot of people change their minds, and they go in undecided. Remember, Ted Cruz actually won the Iowa caucus, and that put Ted Cruz in the neck-and-neck battle against Donald Trump. So the Iowa caucus matters a lot. But believe it or not, studies show, according to The Economist, that these debates really do matter. This is not just cable news theater. This is not just show for advertisers. This stuff really changes public opinion, especially during these debates. And the closer we get to the contests that actually matter, such as the big states like California and New York, when we get into March, we get into April, the debates matter even more. So, for example, Hillary Clinton's lead in public polling increased nearly 9 percentage points in 2 weeks that followed the first Democratic debate in 2016. Donald Trump experienced a 4-point bump in 2 weeks after his first debate. Remember when he went after Megyn Kelly? And he made the famous Rosie O'Donnell line, and people doubted Donald Trump the entire time, and he dominated the headlines from that point forward. Economist calculations show that the year before a presidential election, the average change in a candidate's polling numbers in the 2 weeks after a debate was 6%. Debates held in the winter and spring of the election year are even larger effects, an average of 13%. So these really do matter, and especially you actually saw these last two nights. The first night where you kind of had the lower tier candidates, and the second night where you had some lower tier candidates, and we'll go through a lot of them and a lot of the big moments that happened there. you saw a lot of the kind of the fringe candidates like Eric Swalwell, who I think he had 18 people show up to his rally in Virginia. Now, just so you understand, at Turning Point USA, if we don't have hundreds of people show up to even some of our on-campus events, someone's going to be asked some questions of why that's happening. This guy's running for president of the United States, and he's trying to get all the attention he possibly can. And so, but anyway, the point being is that these debates really do matter, and they get a lot of coverage, and they get a lot of buzz, especially the early ones. On the first night, 15.3 million voters tuned in for the Wednesday night debate. On night two, the numbers still have not come in. I'm guessing those numbers will be even more. And so the big takeaway, the thing that the media is really chattering about right now, is the Kamala Harris versus Joe Biden interchange. Kamala Harris going after Joe Biden and cross-examining him for his praise, for his adoration for segregationists, and for his praise of people that were bitter racists in the past.
I do not believe you are a racist. And I agree with you when you commit yourself to the importance of finding common ground. But I also believe, and it's personal, and it was hurtful to hear you talk about the reputations of two United States senators who built their reputations and career on the segregation of race in this country. And it was not only that, but you also worked with them to oppose busing. And, you know, there was a little girl in California who was part of the second class to integrate her public schools, and she was bused to school every day. And that little girl was me.
So that's going viral so quickly right now. I love how Harris has to start with the preface. I don't believe you are a racist. But I do have to say, I agree with you when you commit yourself to the importance of finding common ground. She continued to the whole thing. But the line that's going viral is, that little girl was me. Now, you have to understand, Biden has a very checkered past when it comes to race relations. In this issue in particular, just so you understand what she's talking about, Joe Biden was perfectly fine with the federal government not getting involved in busing black students into schools. And now I want you to listen to this part of the clip where Joe Biden actually tries to justify his stance there.
The fact is that in terms of busing, you would have been able to go to school the same exact way because it was a local decision made by your city council. That's fine. That's one of the things I argued for, that we should be breaking down these lines.
Now, the importance of that clip is Joe Biden is effectively doubling down on his radicalism. Instead of Joe Biden doing kind of the new Biden thing, which is, I was a different guy back then. Sure, I supported the Iraq War. Sure, I supported the Hyde Amendment. Sure, I supported the Clinton crime bill, but I don't believe that stuff anymore. He actually was caught a little off guard here. And he was not upset at what he used to say back then. He's now upset that someone is talking about it today. And now he said what he really believes, which is, well, back then I was talking about desegregation. He was actually defending himself. That's a real, real dangerous position for Joe Biden to take. And you want to actually talk about his whole history of race. Let's go back through that. One of his best friends in the United States Senate was former KKK leader Robert Byrd, who was also close friends with Hillary Clinton. In the early 1990s, he was the main author of the Clinton crime bill, which through many objective analysis shows that it disproportionately affected African-American communities. Joe Biden called African-American men super predators. Joe Biden described Barack Obama as, finally, we have a clean-cut black guy running for president of the United States. Joe Biden described Indian Americans. That's right, Indian Americans in Delaware. In fact, I want to play this sound for you. Joe Biden described Indian Americans in Delaware as the following. He said, you cannot walk into a 7-Eleven in Delaware without a slight Indian accent, which is a totally racist thing to say. It's not even a funny joke whatsoever. Let's listen to that sound.
In Delaware, the largest growth in population is Indian Americans moving from India. You cannot go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight Indian accent. It's a fully, I'm not joking. Oh, gigantic.
And so this is not a new phenomenon for Joe Biden. But what has changed? The tone and the tenor of the Democrat Party has changed. They have overreacted to Donald Trump in such a horrific way. and they have miscategorized him as a racist, and they've miscategorized him for what he has said as hateful, that people that have actual racism in their pasts are now getting absolutely cross-examined, attacked, and obliterated by the base of the Democrat Party. And you saw this with Ralph Northam from Virginia, blackface Ralph Northam, who is still the Democrat governor today. So now Joe Biden is bumbling around, and I call really my big takeaway from this debate is Biden on trial. Joe Biden had very few moments where he definitively came out on top. And what does Joe Biden do? How does he end up? How does he want to close the debate off? What's his big send-off? He goes back to trying to attack the president as a racist. Let's listen to how Joe Biden ended the debate.
I'm running to lead this country because I think it's important we restore the soul of this nation. This president has ripped it out. It's the only president in our history who has equated racist and white supremacist with ordinary and decent people. He's the only president who has engaged and embraced dictators and thumbed their nose at our allies. I'm secondly running for president because I think we have to restore the backbone of America, the poor and hardworking middle class people. You can't do that without replacing them with the dignity they once had. Lastly, we got to unite the United States of America as much as anybody says we can. If we do, there's not a single thing the American people can't do. This is the United States of America. We can do anything if we're together, together. So God bless you all and may God protect our troops.
Now, he touched on a couple topics there, but he also started rather clumsily by saying the president, we've never seen a president talk about bitter racists in Charlottesville like he did in Charlottesville. Well, actually, Joe Biden, you were friends with actual segregationists. You were friends with people, and you still praise them to this day. Joe Biden, you have a really horrible record on race, and Kamala Harris is holding you accountable for that, rightfully so. And if you think this is the end of your cross-examination, if you think you are done standing trial for the things that you have said and you have done, this is just the very beginning. But you have to understand, Kamala Harris is terrible. Kamala Harris is a power-hungry politician. Kamala Harris isn't even that charismatic. And Kamala Harris is able to do that in the first debate, and she did it so strategically. I have to say, whoever's giving her advice, whoever her advisors were, she fit it perfectly. It was not right off the bat. It didn't look too overzealous. It flowed. It flowed perfectly. And as you're listening to this podcast right now, because we're actually recording this fresh after the debate, we're recording this. I just watched the debate, and I wanted to go to our audience right now. I wanted to go to you guys and let you know my observations and my takeaways. As you're listening to this podcast, you're going to be reading headlines that say Kamala Harris is the big winner. So I'm predicting it right now. I'm predicting that she's going to be called the big winner of the night. Now, mind you, she really offered no policy. She offered no vision for the future. But she does put forth a lot of the big interest, needs, and wants of the Democrat Party. First of all, she's a minority. Second of all, she's a woman. And third of all, she's not afraid to fight. And the Democrat base right now is angry. And you're kind of seeing this new kind of binary choice, Kamala versus Biden. You're seeing Kamala versus Biden. And towards the beginning of the debate, a lot of the energy and a lot of the focus was on Bernie Sanders' foolish idea of Medicare for all. But throughout the debate, you saw Kamala Harris really stand her ground and use very effective language to be able to get attention during the debate. Not to mention, Kamala Harris was a total failure in California. Everything she did. And Kamala Harris is largely considered to be a failure when she was district attorney in San Francisco and attorney general of California. And by the way, she hasn't even been in the United States Senate very long. It's not like she's had this long career and she's actually gotten stuff done. She basically won the election and then goes right after Donald Trump to go run for president. Her record will be put public very, very soon. Not too much to worry there. So let's go back to the first debate, where Warren was definitely called the winner. So the first night, Warren is called the winner, and I'm predicting the second night, Kamala Harris is going to be called the winner. And riding high off of a very positive MoveOn.org poll, you have to understand that MoveOn.org, which was actually, it's a grassroots organization that was founded right after the Clinton impeachment hearings to try to move on the country. That's actually where they got their name, MoveOn.org. Senator Warren is essentially the fan favorite of MoveOn.org. She has signed their email solicitations for years. They love her at MoveOn, and she is surging in their polls. And you start to see that Bernie Sanders Bernie Sanders does not do too well when there's no alternative to him. Bernie Sanders is not doing as well when it's not just Hillary versus Bernie, where the anti-Hillary votes have somewhere to go. Now the anti-Hillary votes or the anti-establishment votes, Biden is the new Hillary, just so you understand. Biden is the new establishment. Biden is the heir apparent. Now they have many, many places to run to. One of my favorite moments in debate night number one is when Robert Francis O'Rourke gets destroyed both by de Blasio and Castro. I mean, look, Robert Francis O'Rourke is one of the most disingenuous politicians. Can he say anything without bobbing up and down? Now, look, I understand everyone has their own mannerisms. Everyone has their own idiosyncrasies. So I don't want to focus too much on that. But he's a very, very tough watch on television. Always bobbing up and down. And of course, Robert Francis O'Rourke, the Irishman from El Paso, was the first one to break into Spanish. Not to be undone by Cory Booker, who also spoke Spanish horribly, by the way. And Robert Francis O'Rourke is trying to overly pander to people that are illegal and trying to overly pander to the Hispanic community. And, you know, I talk to a lot of Hispanics. I talk to a lot of people in the Hispanic community. And more times than not, I'd say 90%, they believe English should be the official language of the United States. In fact, I told our producer, right, Mr. Producer, that I want to do a special edition. I want to do a special episode of the Charlie Kirk Show in the next couple weeks talking about why English should be the official language of the United States. In order for a country to communicate effectively, in order for values to be shared without unnecessary divisions to be created, a unifying language is super important. And if you want to look at other countries where they don't have unified languages, they are hyper-segregated societies. India is a great example of this. India is a failed experiment in a multilingual society. One of the main reasons that we've been able to have people come from all over the world to seamlessly come into our culture is because there was an expectation you were going to learn the language so you could communicate, so that you were going to be able to communicate your values, your differences, and your needs and your wants. And so I believe this whole push towards a multilingual society is one that will actually make us more divided, not more united. Of course, the left tries to make it seem as if this is a push for unity, when in reality, it's something that's going to be a hyper-divisive tool in our country, because I don't speak Spanish. I speak a couple words in Spanish. But when I hear someone speak Spanish, I get confused. So I want you to understand, for anyone, when you hear a language you don't hear, you think of confusion. What's the next thing after confusion? You get upset. I'm like, I don't understand what he's saying. Not upset that they're speaking, not upset at the culture. Don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm saying. But a very natural reaction after confusion is you get a little unsettled. You get a little upset. And we have proven over hundreds of years of our history that immigrants can learn English from all across the world, whether it be from Asia, South America, Africa, all across the world, that English is a unifying language. And so it just bothers me, the over-pandering to the Hispanic community. And I'm telling you right now, Donald Trump is going to do a lot better in the Hispanic community than people ever think. Actually, after debate night number one, before debate number two, I thought to myself, is Joe Biden going to speak Chinese in the second debate? Because obviously that's the constituency that matters the most to him. You know, my great friend Steve Hilton, who is a total superstar, I go on his show at least I think once a month now, which is just an amazing opportunity on Fox News. And thank you for those of you that watch Steve Hilton, The Next Revolution. He's a true populist, great guy. He oftentimes calls Joe Biden Joe China. Just a fast fact alert, Joe Biden took his son, Hunter Biden, this is really important, on Air Force Two, which is the private jet, the private plane of the Vice President of the United States, on a plane from Washington, D.C. to China, took his son and Chinese officials on that plane. And days later, his son, Hunter Biden, then secured $1 billion-plus investment to a fund he was uniquely underqualified to run, a fund he still has connections to, and a fund he made millions of dollars off of. And I just want to do a huge shout out to the investigative work of Peter Schweitzer. He does an amazing job of unearthing this stuff. His book was really the one that normalized the narrative against the Clinton Crime Foundation. He unearthed a lot of those foreign payments to the Clinton Foundation, a lot of those speeches, and just a great shout out to him. He does a phenomenal, phenomenal job. So I was wondering if Joe Biden was going to go out and speak Chinese. But what was amazing to me, and let's play a little sound here, when the Democrats in the second night, in debate night number two, were asked what they thought was the biggest existential threat to America. And most specifically, Kamala Harris reinserts herself when she talks about which she believes the greatest existential threat. I'm going to correct myself, of course, because I know I'm going to get critiqued. I hear you, Media Matters. Chinese is, of course, Mandarin or Cantonese, okay? So I'm going to make sure I'm 100% correct here on The Charlie Kirk Show. I want you to listen to what Kamala Harris believes is the greatest existential threat to our country. You're not going to believe it.
We talked about, you asked before, what is the greatest national security threat to the United States? It's Donald Trump. And I'm going to tell you why. Because I agree, climate change represents an existential threat. He denies the science. You want to talk about North Korea, real threat in terms of nuclear arsenal. But what does he do? He embraces Kim Jong-un, a dictator, for the sake of a photo op. Putin, you want to talk about
Senator
Russia?
Harris, we're going to
he
do
takes the word of the Russian president
the
over the word of the American intelligence community when it comes to a threat to our democracy and our elections.
Thank you, Senator
These
Harris.
These are the issues that are before us, Chuck.
I hear you.
That's right. Kamala Harris believes, just like Governor Inslee from Washington on debate night number one believes, that Donald Trump, the great president of our country, the president who is brokering peace in North Korea, who has abolished ISIS, who is preventing a reckless war against Iran, who has overseen the greatest economy in U.S. history, who has given us Gorsuch and has given us Kavanaugh, has given us 100-plus circuit court judges, that's the president that they believe. Not just the president, let me be more specific. That is the entity that they believe is the greatest threat to our country. Not ISIS cutting people's heads off. Not China killing us on trade and stealing our IP and building a world empire. Not Russia. I thought out of nowhere, Russia is no longer the biggest threat. Out of nowhere, Russia all of a sudden gets kind of shrugged off. Russia got a couple mentions, but nowhere near where it would have gotten if this debate happened 6 months ago or a year ago, mind you. Kamala Harris and Governor Jay Inslee said that Donald Trump, a duly elected president of the United States, who has seen his net worth go down significantly, who cares so deeply about the citizens of our country, who is the greatest patriot to take office of a generation, definitely since Ronald Reagan, she believes, so does Governor Jay Inslee, that he is the greatest threat to our country, an absolutely reprehensible stance. But there are two words that received no mention from any candidates. In fact, well, I didn't catch every single minute of every debate. I missed a little bit. I missed about 5 minutes of the first debate. So if I'm misspeaking here, then I'm sure I'll get corrected. So let me make sure I'm hyper-specific because I get everything I say gets fact-checked and gets raked through and all that fun stuff here at The Charlie Kirk Show. I don't believe this was a primary focus. Let's say that's a fair way. This was definitely not a primary focus of the debate. Two words. Basically no mention whatsoever. Bob Mueller. Isn't that interesting? Isn't it interesting that for the last 2 years, we spent $40 million, the drums of impeachment were being beat by Rachel Maddow, who, interestingly enough, was helping moderate this debate. You got to love the impartial debate moderators. And in defense of the Democrat debate, this is a partisan debate. This is one where you're speaking to the base of the party, but still, Rachel Maddow, I mean, she's been wrong about basically everything for the last 2 years. She's been promising her audience impeachment. Instead, she's seeing Donald Trump go up in the polls, solidify his base, have 40,000 people go to his reelection launch 500 days away from the election, raise $1 million an hour for 27 hours straight, which is an absolutely remarkable achievement. And President Trump raised over $36 million in the last 10 days since his election launch. Absolutely incredible. So there's Rachel Maddow. She's gotten the exact opposite. But isn't it amazing that Mueller is coming? Mueller is coming. You know, I go to some of these Democrat protests and I go to some of these Democrat, let's just say, uprisings, if you want to call it that way. And I see kind of what the base is always talking about. And I debate some of them, and I see these signs. It's Mueller time. Mueller is coming. If you think winter is coming, Mueller is coming. I mean, you see hundreds of these signs. And you have to understand that one of the things I try to do is I try to understand the American left. As I try to understand where they're coming from, I try to understand what motivates them. I try to understand their basic philosophical ideas. I try to understand the underpinnings of their worldview. And I think that is so important. I encourage everyone listening to this podcast to do exactly the same. As a side note and a tangent to that, before I get more into Bob Mueller and their lack of mentioning it, do you ever notice how the left never tries to understand conservatives? Do you think if you go listen to a liberal podcast right now, they're doing everything they possibly can to dive deep to understand the conservative mind? Do you think Rachel Maddow really goes out of her way to understand Donald Trump's intentions and where he's coming from? In fact, it's the exact opposite. They immediately attack the intentions of the right. conservatives always try to find out where liberals are coming from. Liberals never try to find where conservatives are coming from. Just an interesting side note. But anyway, Mueller is coming. Bob Mueller. I'd be getting tweets all the time from the blue check mob of journalists and activists that have overly inflated egos with very, very low following counts and engagement on Twitter that would say, Bob Mueller is going to indict all these people. The end is near. And now here we are. The first string of Democrat debates. On debate night number two with all these major candidates. You have Bernie. You have Kamala Harris. You had at least four sitting U.S. senators, am I right, Mr. Producer? At least four sitting U.S. senators. One former governor, one member of Congress, Eric Swalwell, House of Representatives. And no one goes out of their way to, first of all, call for impeachment, which I find to be very interesting. Don't you agree, Mr. Producer? Yeah, I know. No call for impeachment. No call for impeachment yet. Now, mind you, they have called for it in the past, but they did not find the opportunity. No one went out of their way to call for impeachment. But also no one referenced the Mueller report. No one went out of their way to say, according to the Mueller report on page 414, don't you think for a second that if something that incriminating in the Mueller report existed, they would have mentioned it, everybody? If the Mueller report was really this horrible document that should lead for impeachment, it assuredly would have been mentioned in one of these debates. And that alone should show the exoneration and the victory of Donald Trump. Because you know that every single one of those candidates would have organically mentioned it. And I just got a kick out of Marianne Williamson, who I actually thought, Marianne Williamson, she's a New Age author, and I mean, she seems like a nice enough person. But her message was very interesting. I looked at her a lot different. What I appreciate most about Marianne Williamson's approach is I think she understands how formidable Donald Trump is. And she kind of alluded to this throughout the night, because you can start to see these other candidates. They're talking about all their plans and all this, and Marianne Williamson's actually talking about tactics. She realizes that Donald Trump is one of the most effective political figures in American history, and she does not underestimate him. And I think some of the other people on the debate stage do, as I think they do. It's 2019. Everyone needs a great pair of wireless earbuds. These are terrific. But before you go dropping hundreds of dollars on a pair, you need to check out the wireless earbuds from Raycon. These have no wires. They are terrific. The sound quality is off the charts. They start about half the price of any other premium wireless earbud on the market, and they sound just as amazing. The company is actually co-founded by Ray J. Raycon's E50 wireless earbuds have totally changed the game for me. They're so comfortable and so easy to take anywhere. Unlike some of your other wireless options, Raycon earbuds are both stylish and discreet, with no dangling wires or stems. And of course, they don't just look great, they sound great too. Raycon wireless earbuds, I'm telling you, they do such an amazing job when you're working out, when you're traveling through the airport. You need to get Raycon. Raycon offers their wireless earbuds for everyone in a range of fun colors at an unbeatable price. Go to raycon.com/Kirk to get 20% off your order right now. That's Raycon. That's buyraycon.com/Kirk. Buyraycon.com/Kirk to get 20% off right now. If you've been eyeing a pair, now is the time to get an amazing deal. One more time, buyraycon.com/Kirk. What also is really interesting about these two debates is, for the first time in my life, I see a group of people going out of their way to try to sell misery in the time of prosperity. Things are horrible. The economy is not working. People have to work two jobs. So Kamala Harris goes out of her way to attack Joe Biden. I put on all this praise on Kamala Harris, and I think she did a fine job with that racist thing. But now it's time. Let's put Kamala Harris on a little, let's put her on the witness stand. All right, Senator Harris. So Senator Harris says one of the first things that she's going to do is repeal the Trump tax cut. Repeal the Trump tax cut that only benefited the corporations. This is one of the biggest lies, and everyone, you can go independently fact check me on this. The average middle class family got a tax cut of $1,400 a year, and the child tax credit was doubled thanks to the Trump tax cut. It was the largest middle class tax cut in American history. And yes, the corporate tax cut was also lowered for good reason. Do you know who works for corporations? Middle class folks. Do you know what happens when corporations are able to cut taxes? Hire more people, build more factories, buy more machinery. And yes, they're also able to do stock buybacks. Oh my gosh, stock buybacks are the worst thing ever. You know, MSNBC, and they do all these specials on how stock buybacks are the worst thing. Do you know that 66% of Americans ages 30 to 64 are in the stock market and they've seen their value of their pensions, retirements, and college saving accounts soar under Donald Trump? The Dow has hit over 100 record highs. So let's just go through some economic statistics. Remember, these group of Democrats, I call them Democrat demagogues, are trying to sell misery in times of prosperity. Unemployment for those without a high school education are at all-time lows under President Trump. Disabled unemployment, all-time low, falling 20% since the Trump tax cuts. Of course, we talk about on our program frequently, lowest ever black unemployment, Asian, Hispanic, veteran, and youth unemployment. Economic growth, which disproportionately benefits workers without exposure to the stock market, has grown 3% average over the last five quarters. Economists say that economic growth is the most equivalent indicator for standard of living increases. Under Obama, his horrendous less than 2% economic growth barely doubled the standard of living. In the Trump economy, standard of living across the board has more than tripled thanks to tax cuts and deregulation. Wage growth for the 10% of workers with the lowest incomes was 6.5%, double the overall wage growth. Wages overall are growing at 3.2%. Compare this to 2% average wage growth in the Obama economy. His economy was the one that didn't work for all Americans. Not just Obama's economy, Obama Biden's economy. Yeah, I kind of like that, Mr. Producer. Obama Biden's economy. Poor Americans are getting off the government and into the job market. Nearly 6 million people have dropped off of food stamps eligibility, meaning they're earning too much to qualify. This is a huge success. You see, if you watch these Democrat debates, you think America is in a recession. If you watch the Democrat debates, you think we're in this horrendous period of time. If you watch these Democrat debates, you think things have never been worse. When in reality, 6 million people, Kamala Harris, 6 million people, Senator Harris, have their wages and their income go up so much, they are no longer on food stamps. To clarify what I said, Kamala Harris said she would pass a middle-class tax cut, essentially alluding to, and she said it before, she would get rid of the Trump tax cut. But where she's really being disingenuous here is that the Trump tax cut was a middle-class tax cut. She makes it seem as if the middle class of this country have not gotten enough tax relief. I want to be hyper-specific when I talk about this stuff. Over 500,000 manufacturing jobs have been created under Donald Trump. These are jobs that benefit blue-collar folks, the very same people the Democrats pretend they want to give value to. Oh, by the way, there was a little talk about race. Notice that Rachel Maddow, Chuck Todd, they never talk about the lowest ever black unemployment rate or that black ownership of small businesses had increased 400% under President Trump. Did you know after the Trump tax law, billions in private investment in opportunity zones, which are 45% of those businesses are owned by minorities, there's been a huge increase. 3 years ago, that number was down to 15 to 30%. We have success after success on every economic horizon. Yet if you listen to the Democrats, it seems as if things have never been worse. Never before have we seen a political party so determined to sell misery to people that have seen their lives improve dramatically. If you were to watch this Democrat debate 50 years from now with no context of what was going on economically, you would venture a guess and assume things were really, really bad. When in reality, wages are going up, household income is going up, house values are going up, and people's lives are improving. And quite honestly, this is the death of a party. This is the death of a Democrat party. They are power-hungry politicians that are still dazed and confused since the election of Donald Trump. They have no clarity, they have no vision, and instead they're at opposition every single turn. And you see this kind of inkling. And again, this is a much longer philosophical point that we're going to build out on the Charlie Kirk Show for weeks to come and months to come, that Bernie Sanders says we need transformation in our country. And this is the really big point is, do we really need transformation? Are we really going in that horrendous of a direction under President Trump? Or is that his policies are actually working? Is it that his idea of the revitalization of America is actually proven to be successful? They're selling misery to America is not going to work. Them selling this broken idea of America is going to backfire tremendously. And so you're seeing the fights of the Democrat Party to come in the next 6 months. Now, mind you, we're still very early. The Iowa caucus is not another 6 or 7 months away from now. and you got the New Hampshire primary, and you got the whole cycle that's coming there. But they're fighting as if the caucus is just days away. And you have to understand the fundamentals that Joe Biden was unable to defend his record. Joe Biden was unable to surge above the rest. And that Kamala Harris, who is a weak politician, flawed on ideas, was able to get that big kind of a praise. And I'm sure she's going to win all the headlines at the time and the posting of this podcast. And same with Senator Warren. You see that the media views their role as activist journalists. They want that kind of matchup of Warren versus Harris. How radical can we get? How much stuff can we get? How much stuff can we give away? Essentially, that's the whole competition. I do have to say that Bill de Blasio, the worst mayor in New York City history and probably the worst mayor in America, won the competition of who could give out the most stuff. No matter what it is, he always chimes in, oh, I can give out more stuff than that. I can give out more stuff than that. And isn't it interesting that Bob Mueller, the big Mueller report, the silence, nobody mentions it. We have just moved on. And that is a disgrace. It is a disgrace because that was an illegally founded investigation where Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and Bruce Ohr and James Comey and Andrew McCabe did some highly unethical and probably illegal things to overthrow the President of the United States to start the entire Russia investigation. We had a two-year, $30 million investigation into Donald Trump that resulted in nothing. And you better believe if there was impeachment material, if there was stuff out there to actually impeach Donald Trump, you would have heard it. While Democrats are bickering amongst themselves, the president is raising millions of dollars. He's filling up arenas with tens of thousands of people. And I'll tell you what, you want to know one of the unintended consequences of these debates is going to be? It's going to solidify Donald Trump's base even further. It's going to activate his volunteers. It's going to grow his donor base. Because I know, for one, the people in my immediate family and the friends that I know that are watching this debate, they said, oh my goodness, I might not be Donald Trump's biggest fan, but this is unacceptable. What can I do? How can I get engaged? How can I get involved? So the more that they are going to show, whether it be from immigration to abortion, healthcare, college tuition, Supreme Court, these Democrats are running to the left. It's a competition to the left, off the left of the cliff. And Donald Trump is going to benefit tremendously because of it. Their big philosophy is that not that America has made mistakes, but America is a mistake. And they and only them and their transformational ways are going to bring us in a direction that will somehow benefit the future. And that is such a flawed viewpoint. It's an incorrect viewpoint on every single facet and perspective. And in closing, I think the biggest issue going into 2020 is going to be immigration. Whether it be Julian Castro, who's actually trying to make it a civil offense to enter into America, not a criminal offense, this is how radical they have become. Or whether it be every single hand, I think Joe Biden like half raised his hand. Whether it be every single candidate on the debate who raised their hand, who said they will give full universal health care to foreign nationals who have broken the laws to go into our country. I mean, at least they admit now that the southern border is a crisis. Remember when Donald Trump signed the emergency declaration declaring a crisis on the southern border? And Kirsten Gillibrand and Senator Harris and all these people said Donald Trump is manufacturing a crisis on the southern border. Well, at least they agree now that there's a crisis on the southern border. And one of the moderators said, oh, what about the thousands of people that are coming here to declare asylum? Well, you have to understand a lot of people that are coming here are not coming to declare asylum. They're coming to illegally enter into America. And if they are caught, they're going to declare asylum. Big difference. The radicalism of this party has gone to an extent that they are going to pay a significant price for it. Not in the Democrat debate, not whatsoever. But long term, this party is dead. This party is radically redefined. It is not the Democrat Party anymore. It is now the Socialist Party of Bernie Sanders or the Socialist Party of Elizabeth Warren, which it does not matter what the issue is. Give it away. Take it from somebody else. Give it away. You make it, they take it. Borders open. Guns, confiscate them. Abortion, free. Genders, doesn't exist. Gender roles, women are great, men are horrible. Which, of course, those sort of absolutes are out of control. But going back to immigration, if you look at this issue, the Democrats have disenfranchised hundreds of millions of Americans with their current position of immigration. And I believe there will come a time where they regret it. You kind of saw Joe Biden kind of tiptoe around that and dance. Because Joe Biden's political instincts are better than some of these power-hungry Democrats that just think they have to say whatever it takes to get the nomination, then they can explain their way away from it later on. Well, anyway, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of The Charlie Kirk Show. We watch the Democrat debates so you don't have to. You get cutting analysis, fresh perspective, new ideas that other shows are not giving you. Please go give us those 5 stars. Ask us those questions. We appreciate you guys so much. Coming up on Monday, we have my exclusive conversation with the one and the only Nigel Farage. That's right. We have our exclusive conversation with Nigel Farage. Make sure to tune in on that. Please give us those 5 stars on your podcast app. It helps us so much. We are surging in the charts. Thanks to all of you. This is Charlie Kirk signing off from The Charlie Kirk Show. I watch the Democrat debate so you don't have to. And if you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com, the nation's largest student movement dedicated to educating, identifying, and organizing the next generation around the values of free markets, smaller government, American exceptionalism. Get involved today. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you in the next edition of The Charlie Kirk Show.
It was a crime no one expected, and one many can't forget.
They were brutalized, and we saw the evidence of that.
22 Hours, An American Nightmare, a new podcast from WTOP News and Podcast One, details the heinous murders of a D.C. power couple, their 10-year-old son, and housekeeper inside their own home. The complicated trail of evidence.
She thinks she knows how Darren Wint got inside the house.
Oh my God, I saw Amy yesterday.
And shocking moments from the trial.
His defense team drops a bombshell.
Will this investigation lead to the release of confidential audio recordings from the case?
So it's under general counsel review. I mean, I'm committing to making a transparent court.
22 Hours, An American Nightmare. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts today.